This is Naked Astronomy with me, Dominic Ford, and with Ben Valtler.
Now, we often talk about planets being found in the habitable zone or Goldilocks zone around a star, where it's thought that conditions are right to keep water liquid and potentially harbour life. But now, new research from Sean McMahon at the University of Aberdeen suggests that there are other properties we need to think about, and even outside the Goldilocks zone, internal heat might be just enough to keep life flourishing.
The problem is how to update the concept of habitable zones, which are ranges of distances from stars where the temperature is right for liquid water on the surface of a planet, to take into account deep biospheres, which might be below the surface of the planet.
Why, historically, have we always considered the surface temperature to be so important?
Partly because it's an easier thing to predict, because it mostly depends on the amount of solar radiation coming in, whereas the temperature below the surface depends on all kinds of properties of the planet. And also probably just because this concept was formulated in the early 90s, and since then our understanding of life below the surface has hugely increased. So maybe it just wasn't thought of as a significant problem at the time.
And how much life is there beneath the surface? We do think of surface life, but there is life underground. How significant a contribution is it?
Well, that's right, and it's quite poorly understood, but you can see estimates ranging from, say, 50% of all biomass on the Earth, plus or minus as much as 20%. Or even more. It's very poorly understood, but it's certainly comparable significance to the surface biosphere.
So when we're looking at planets, we consider the distance from the star. That gives us a good idea of how hot the surface will be, at least. What are the other sources of heat?
So there are four main ways that planets get hot on the inside. The first one is the radioactive decay of certain elements that tend to get incorporated into rocky planets when they form. The second one is what's called tidal forces. So these are gravitational interactions between objects that stretch and squash them and generate frictional heat on the inside. The other two are so-called heat of accretion and heat of differentiation. They're kind of heat left over from when the planets formed and all the material was brought together and interacted and the planet formed. So those last two kinds of heat tail off over time. Obviously radioactivity declines over time as well, but it tends to take longer.
So there's a lot to consider when working out how warm a planet is likely to be. How do you combine all of this to give you a good idea of whether a planet really might be habitable subsurface?
Well, almost all of the heat is heat from radioactive decay. What we've actually done here is to assume that other planets have essentially that they produce heat at the same rate per unit mass as the Earth does. So that way we take into account all these different sources of heat. And radioactive heat production, and probably also the other kinds of heat production, approximately scale with mass. So if you double the mass, you double the heat production. So we've just maintained that assumption throughout our work.
And that then gives you all of the calculations you need to produce a model that will tell you, say, for a given star or for a given planet, whether it's likely to be habitable or not.
Yeah, and also at what depth below the surface you would expect, if any, to find liquid water and hence possibly life.
So let's just say I'm using one of the space satellites we have at the moment. I've identified a planet, and I want to know it so I can tell the world whether I think there's likely to be life on there or not. What figures do I need to put into your model?
Well, you need to know the distance from the star, and it certainly helps if you know the mass or radius of the planet. It'd be even better if you get the density of the planet so that we can confirm that it's made out of the same kind of stuff as the Earth.
And it must matter whether it's a rocky planet like Earth, or a gas giant, or an icy body like we have on the outside of the solar system. Do the same calculations still apply?
You have to vary the calculations slightly for icy planets. Obviously, if a larger proportion of the planet is ice, that means that a smaller proportion of it is rock, so there's going to be less of that heat production by the elements in the rocks. If you're looking at a particular planet and you want to know whether it's icy, you can sort of guess from how far away it is from its star, because we know that planets further away tend to have more ice in them. And you can sort of get some idea as well from its mass. So if it's a very big planet, if it's in the same sort of size range as Jupiter, then we're not going to treat it as a rocky planet. But if it's more like the Earth and it's fairly close to its star, that's a good sign that it's probably a rocky planet.
And how much do you think this extends our interpretation of the habitable zone? How much bigger do you think it's likely to get?
It's difficult to be precise, and a lot depends on how similar other solar systems and planets turn out to be to our own. But certainly several fold. Habitable zones for biospheres a few kilometres below the surface are several times larger than habitable zones just considering the surface.
We always think of these habitable zones as being halos around a star, but we also know that solar systems are quite destructive environments. Occasionally there'll be collisions and problems where planets actually get flung out away from their star completely. Knowing that there might be residual heat, does this actually mean that these rogue planets could potentially be sites of liquid water and therefore possibly contain life?
So certainly people have already speculated that there might be these so-called rogue planets with liquid water on their surfaces because some of them might form with that sort of exotic dense atmospheres. We don't have to do anything exotic like that. We can have a planet that doesn't have any atmosphere at all that might still have liquid water at some depth within, say, the top 10 kilometres of its surface, as long as it's large enough and produces enough heat, which we think is likely. And that means we can have these so-called rogue planets receiving no energy from their stars at all, so they're in completely in interstellar space, but they still have enough heat inside for subsurface liquid water.
Now, sadly, at the moment, we can't get out to these exoplanets. We can't drill down through ice to see if there are subsurface water and possibly subsurface life. Are there any other markers or indicators that we can use to look at a planet from afar and say we think there probably is liquid beneath the surface?
So in our own solar system, we found that planets and moons with water in the subsurface do express it in various ways at the surface. So, for instance, we see these great plumes of ice coming out of Enceladus, which represent subsurface liquid water that's being erupted. And you might also find atmospheric signs of a deep biosphere. For exoplanets, it's a bit more difficult. You might hope that using spectroscopic techniques, you could possibly detect similar kinds of plumes or atmospheric signs of a deep biosphere. But at the moment, that's certainly a problem with our model, that it actually might just be unfalsifiable for the time being.
So what's the next step now? How do we refine the models further? How do we turn this model into a tool for predicting the likelihood of subsurface water?
I think we need to improve the quality of the observations, particularly of exoplanets. We need to improve our models for understanding how solar systems form and how uniform they really are in terms of their composition and sizes of planets and so on. Once we have a more detailed model of what planets tend to be like, how they tend to form, how similar they might be or not be to our own solar system, then we can constrain the likely depths of liquid water and perhaps biospheres on a typical planet much more precisely.
Sean McMahon from the University of Aberdeen.